I now ask for your kind attention while we listen to Brother Alan Clark of the Napton Ecclesia to address us upon Judah and Jerusalem.
My dear brethren and sisters, what can we say about Judah and Jerusalem? A glorious climax of the purpose of God. After what we have heard today, surely we will not again ask the question that Paul asks in Romans chapter 11 when he says, I say then, hath God cast away his people? Certainly not. For I also am an Israelite, of the seed of Abraham, of the tribe of Benjamin. God hath not cast away his people which he foreknew. Watch ye not what the scripture saith of Elias, how he maketh intercession to God against Israel, saying, Lord, they have killed thy prophets and digged down thine altars, and I am left alone, and they seek my life. But what saith the answer of God unto him? I have reserved to myself 7,000 men that have not bowed the knee to the image of Baal. Even so then, at this present time also, there is a remnant according to the election of grace. What Elijah had to learn was that the people of Israel were not to be changed by great manifestations of power. What he had to learn was that the means by which the hearts of Israel would be changed was by the preaching of the Word of God. And so Elijah still has his work to do. The prophecy is there in Malachi chapter 4, where the prophet, in the concluding words of the Old Testament scriptures, in our version at least, speaks of the restoration of the nation of Israel, the turning back to the disposition of their fathers. Malachi chapter 4 and verse 4. Remember ye the law of Moses my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgments. It's that law, brethren and sisters, the Spirit word revealed unto his people, that is going to change them. And the one that is going to be involved in the changing of the hearts of the people is Elijah. Behold, I send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. And in the book of Leviticus, in that law that Moses gave to his people, a remarkable chapter, which as Deuteronomy chapter 28 at the end of the wilderness journey spoke of the future history of the people of Israel, Leviticus chapter 26 at the beginning of the wilderness journey at the foot of Mount Sinai speaks of their waywardness and of their being punished 7 times for their sins. And we believe that the punishing of them 7 times for their sins was at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar. And that earlier this century we have the reversal of that destruction in 1917. The work of restoring the nation of Israel commenced. Leviticus chapter 26, I believe, is what Paul had in mind when he wrote to the letter to the Romans. Verse 43, the land also shall be left of them, and shall enjoy her Sabbaths while she lieth desolate without them. and they shall accept the punishment of their iniquity, because they despised my judgments, and because their soul abhorred my statutes. Notice, brethren and sisters, the punishment of their iniquity was not because they were not impressed by the manifestations of power that they had seen in the mount, but because they despised his judgments and their soul abhorred his statutes. And yet, for all that, when they be in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, neither will I abhor them to destroy them utterly and to break my covenant with them, for I am Yahweh, their God. How dare some say that Jerusalem is the Babylon of the apocalypse, with this destiny for his people? I am Yahweh, their God. But I will, for their sakes, remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the nations, that I might be their God. I am Yahweh. And to be their God, brethren and sisters, means that he is their strength, the one that will accomplish their salvation, as he accomplished it in the deliverance from the land of Egypt. Now, the subject of Judah and Jerusalem appears in several parts of the scripture. We want now to just briefly consider a bit of the prophecy of Isaiah, because that opens with a denunciation of the people of his day in a vision concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Isaiah chapter 1, the vision of Isaiah the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. What did he see concerning Judah and Jerusalem? Verse 3, the ox knoweth his owner, and the ass his master's crib, but Israel doth not know, my people doth not consider. It was no pleasant sight, brethren and sisters, the state of the people of Israel. Verse 5, why should ye be stricken any more? Ye will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart faint. From the sole of the foot even unto the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. I believe that the times of the prophecy of Isaiah is the foundation for the parable of the Good Samaritan. Let's just have a look at something of what's said in Luke chapter 10 concerning the parable of the Good Samaritans, and see how God's treatment of his people is portrayed in that parable. Luke chapter 10, verse 25, behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tempted him, saying, Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? That's what he wanted. Jesus told him, thou shalt love Yahweh thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbour as thyself. And he said, who is my neighbour? And we know the parable, that it was the Samaritan, not the Levite, nor the priest, but the Samaritan that looked after this man that was full of wounds and putrefying sores, in the language of Isaiah. He took him to an inn and took care of him. And when he departed, he took out 2 pence, which is equivalent to a half shekel, and gave them to the host, and said unto him, take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, I will repay thee. In the second book of Chronicles, in chapter 28, which was at the time of the prophecy of Isaiah, we have a record of the treatment of the kingdom of Judah, the people of the kingdom of Judah, by their northern neighbours in the northern kingdom of Israel. 2 Chronicles 28 and verse 6. Pekah the son of Remaliah slew in Judah 120,000 in one day. And Isaiah in the 7th chapter said, "Don't be afraid of him, brethren and sisters. Pekah the son of Remaliah slew in Judah 120,000 in one day." And that's about the number that have been killed of the Iraqis during this last war. Just think of it, brethren and sisters. And God says through the prophet Isaiah, "Don't be afraid of him." That's the sort of faith that God expects of his people. And the children of Israel, verse 8, carried away captive of their brethren 200,000 women, sons and daughters, and took also away much spoil from them, and brought the spoil to Samaria. That was their capital. They were Samaritans. 200,000 brethren and sisters, captives. And God says, "Don't be afraid of them." Because God was able to restore. And so he does. He sends his prophet to them and tells them that there's enough, that you're sinful as well up in the north. So send them back. And so verse 15 says, "And the men which were expressed by name rose up and took the captives, and with the spoil," remember they were Samaritans, "they took the captives, and with the spoil clothed all that were naked among them, and arrayed them, and shod them, and gave them to eat and to drink, and anointed them, and carried all the feeble of them upon asses, and brought them to Jericho, the city of palm trees, to their brethren. Then they returned to Samaria." The parable of the Good Samaritan, brothers and sisters, was to tell the people of Judah and Jerusalem of Christ's day that they wouldn't receive salvation from the people of the law, the Levites, nor from the priesthood of Aaron, but from the one they called a Samaritan. In John chapter 8, we won't return to it, John chapter 8 and verse 48, they say to him, "Say we not well that thou art a Samaritan and hast a devil?" He is was the one who was able to deliver them. And this people, whom Isaiah said were full of wounds and putrefying sores, was capable of being saved. The God of Israel was sending his only begotten Son, whom they despised. But he paid the price of their redemption. And when he comes again, he will complete that work of redemption of his people. And so we go on into the second chapter of the prophecy of Isaiah. And we have a further prophecy concerning Judah and Jerusalem. The word that Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. "And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of Yahweh's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it." What a change, brothers and sisters! What a glorious consummation of his purpose. "Many people shall go and say, 'Come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem.' Not by great manifestations of power, but by the understanding
of the word of Yahweh, learning of his ways and learning to walk in his paths. Because out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. He shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. And the exhortation to us, brethren and sisters, as well as to the people of Israel, is, O house of Israel, come ye, and let us walk in the light of Yahweh, brethren and sisters. Here's the exhortation. Let us take this word in day by day. Let us allow it to transform us from the natural creatures of the dust to the sons and daughters of the living God. We've already been referred to the prophet Zechariah today. If we turn to the second chapter, we read there of a prophecy concerning the restoration of Judah and Jerusalem. A glorious prospect is here. Zechariah chapter 2 and verse 1. I lifted up mine eyes again and looked, and behold, a man with a measuring line in his hand. Then said I, Whither goest thou? And he said unto me, To measure Jerusalem, to see what is the breadth thereof and what is the length thereof. Behold, the angel that talked with me went forth, and another angel went out to meet him. And so the judgment, the punishment, the suffering of Jerusalem was to be measured, the length and the breadth of their suffering. It wasn't endless. There was to be an end of the suffering of this people. Of course, the prophecy of Zechariah is in a particular context of the building of the temple after they'd come back from their captivity. And so a measuring line would be very familiar to them. They were involved in building, just as a measuring line is used in building. Verse 4 goes on to say, He said unto him, Run and speak to this young man, saying, Jerusalem shall be inhabited as towns without walls for the multitude of men and cattle therein. For I, saith Yahweh, will be unto her a wall of fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her. The glorious prospect. The glory in the midst of Jerusalem, to which the nations will come to be enlightened. It's a world that we hardly have any conception of in our day. How can we imagine what it's going to be like? But it's certainly going to be something well worth seeing. And verse 10 goes on to say, Sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for lo, I come, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, saith Yahweh. That's a two-edged thing, brothers and sisters. When Yahweh dwells in the midst of his people, and they are not holy like he is holy, then he is there for their destruction. But in this day, they're going to walk in his ways. They're going to be a godly people. I believe that one of the greatest achievements of the kingdom of God will be to make of the people of Israel a righteous nation. Many methods have been used in the history of Israel, but none of them have made Israel a righteous nation. But here we have the prophecy that they will be made righteous. And they'll walk in his ways. Verse 11, And many nations shall be joined to Yahweh in that day, and shall be my people. Not only Israel, they are already his people by this time. The nations are going to be his people. And I will dwell in the midst of thee, and thou shalt know that Yahweh of hosts hath sent me unto thee, and Yahweh shall inherit Judah, his portion in the Holy Land. Oh, brethren and sisters, the concept of that wicked nation constantly turning away from him, and yet he regards them as the apple of his eye, as we've already seen. But his portion in the Holy Land, this people. What a great power is going to be involved to bring about this transformation. He shall choose Jerusalem again, he says. And we can echo the thoughts of the prophet when we contemplate these things. Be silent, O all flesh, before Yahweh, for he is raised up out of his holy habitation. Prophet Zechariah has much to say concerning the glorious situation of Judah and Jerusalem in the days that are soon to dawn upon the earth. In the 8th chapter, we have a further indication that the nations will come to learn of Yahweh, to the centre of the world, as it will then be. Chapter 8 and verse 21. The inhabitants of one city shall go to another, saying, let us go speedily to pray before Yahweh and to seek Yahweh of hosts. I will go also. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come to seek Yahweh of hosts in Jerusalem and to pray before Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold out of all languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. And so that nation that has been punished is going to be restored. Chapter 9 and verse 12, we won't go on to verse 14, Brother Dennis has already dealt with that, but verse 12 of chapter 9, turn you to the stronghold, ye prisoners of hope. Even today do I declare that I will render double unto thee, when I have bent Judah for me, filled the bow with Ephraim, and raised up thy sons, O Zion, against thy sons, O Greece, and made thee as the sword of a mighty man. So Judah and Ephraim are going to be joined together in the subduing of the nations before this time of peace that we've already been considering. Chapter 10 says, verse 3, mine anger was kindled against the shepherds, and I punished the goats. For Yahweh of hosts hath visited his flock, the house of Judah. Notice again, his flock, the house of Judah. They are his sheep, brethren and sisters. I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel, the Master said when he came the first time. And here again, he hath visited his flock, the house of Judah, and hath made them as his goodly horse in the battle. Again, the use of them in the subduing of the nations. Out of him, Judah, came forth the corner. Out of him, the nail. Out of him, the battle bow. Out of him, every ruler, as it should be, together. And so we will be accounted to have been of Judah. The saints will be of Judah, just as they are the seed of Abraham and the seed of David, being in Christ Jesus. We turn to Psalm 87. We have there another glorious picture of the exaltation of Jerusalem. Psalm 87. A wonderful psalm talking about the transformation that's going to take place in the age to come. Verse 1. His foundation is in the holy mountains. Yahweh loveth the gates of Zion more than all the dwellings of Jacob. Glorious things are spoken of thee, O city of God. And we just contemplate these things that are spoken of Jerusalem, we've looked at some of them. Glorious things are spoken of thee, O city of God. One stands in awe at these glorious visions that we have in the scriptures. Let us concentrate on them from time to time, brethren and sisters. Let us see that our vision is bright and clear, that we know what we are looking for. We may not know the detail, but we know the glorious nature of the things that are to be revealed in the earth. Mind you, it's surprising how much detail we have of what the kingdom is going to be like. In the prophecy of Isaiah, again, let's go back there. He has so many pictures of the glory to be revealed. In Isaiah chapter 59, first of all, Isaiah chapter 59 and verse 20, "And the Redeemer shall come to Zion, and unto them that turn from transgression in Jacob, saith Yahweh." Redeemer shall come to Zion. The prophecy is going to be fulfilled, brothers and sisters. These things are firm. It's a good foundation for our hope. Chapter 60, "Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of Yahweh is risen upon thee. For behold, darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people." That's the situation of Israel at the present time, brothers and sisters. There is no light there. But their light is going to come, and the glory of Yahweh is going to rise upon that people. We don't love them for their present situation, just as the Father doesn't love them for their present situation. He loves them for the Father's sakes. And if we are going to be like him, then we need to have that same love for his people. But, continuing verse 2, "Yahweh shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee, and the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising. Lift up thine eyes round about, and see, all they gather themselves together, they come to thee. Thy sons shall come from far, and thy daughters shall be nursed at thy side. Then thou shalt see and flow together." A glorious expression. But in the Hebrew, has the idea of shining, the flowing together of waters, and the sun reflected on the movement of the waters, shining there, flowing together, "and thine heart shall fear and be enlarged, because the abundance of the sea shall be converted unto thee. The, as the margin says, the wealth of the Gentiles shall come unto thee." All that wealth controlled by London, as Brother Donald has already told us, is going to be brought to Jerusalem, to the people of Israel. "The multitude of camels shall cover thee, the dromedaries of Midian and Ephah. All they from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense, and they shall show forth the praises of Yahweh." We are told these things, and it's difficult to see just how it'll work in practice. But the picture given to us is of great wealth, great honour brought to the king in Jerusalem, and Israel reflecting in the honour that is given to him, because they will be at the centre of the kingdom. It says, verse 7, "All the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered together unto thee. The rams of Nebaioth shall minister unto thee. They shall come up with acceptance on mine altar, and will glorify the house of my glory." You know, brothers and sisters, we have an indication there that the cultivation of the land and the suitability of the land will be pretty similar in the kingdom to what it is now and what it was in days gone by. We've heard of the Moabite stone today, and the tribute that Mesha, king of Moab, was some hundreds of thousands of sheep annually to the king of Israel. Nebaioth was the people that took over from the Edomites in Mount Seir when they went into the southern part of Judea. And so Nebaioth, the Nabataeans, shall minister unto thee, and they shall come up with acceptance on mine altar. These are Arabs, brethren and sisters. They're sons of Ishmael. And they're going to be accepted in the kingdom. They will learn to fear the God of Israel. They shall come up with acceptance on mine altar. The rams of Nebaioth shall minister unto thee. They'll be used in the sacrifices in the temple. I will glorify the house of my glory. Who are these that fly as a cloud and as the doves to their windows? Surely the isles shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish first. We've already looked at that verse. To bring thy sons from far, their silver and their gold with them, unto the name of Yahweh thy God, and to the Holy One of Israel, because he hath glorified thee. And the sons of strangers shall build up thy walls, and their kings shall minister unto thee. For in my wrath I smote thee. Acceptance on mine altar. The rams of Nebaioth shall minister unto thee. They'll be used in the sacrifices in the temple. I will glorify the house of my glory. Who are these that fly as a cloud and as the doves to their windows? Surely the isles shall wait for me and the ships of Tarshish first. We've already looked at that verse. To bring thy sons from far, their silver and their gold with them, unto the name of Yahweh thy God and to the Holy One of Israel, because he hath glorified thee. And the sons of strangers shall build up thy walls, and their kings shall minister unto thee. For in my wrath I smote thee, but in my favour have I had mercy on thee. And Elijah and those that work with him will have the work of bringing that favour and that mercy to Israel, to bring them to an understanding of the ways of God. While we're in Isaiah, let's look at one or two other passages, because Isaiah tells us quite a bit about the kingdom. The 30th chapter of Isaiah, verse 18, says, "And therefore will Yahweh wait, that he may be gracious unto you, and therefore will he be exalted, that he may have mercy upon you. For Yahweh is a God of judgment. Blessed are all they that wait for him." Yahweh is a God of judgment. He judges his people who turn away from him. He also judges the nations that do any wrong or harm to his people. And because he is a God of judgment, he will defend them. Blessed are all they that wait for him. For the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem. Thou shalt weep no more. He will be very gracious unto thee at the voice of thy cry. When he shall hear it, he will answer thee. And though the Lord give you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet shall not thy teachers be removed into a corner any more, for thine eyes shall see thy teachers. No more the problem that they had in days gone by, when even the priests did not know Yahweh, and they could not teach them his ways. But thine eyes shall see thy teachers. They will now be immortal, brethren and sisters. This is the work of the saints. It's the work that we have to do, that at least some of us will be involved in. And verse 21, "And thine ears shall hear a word behind thee, saying, This is the way, you walk ye in it, when ye turn to the right hand, and when ye turn to the left." Just think of that blessing, brethren and sisters, to the people of that day, if they want to walk in the ways of truth. What's one of our biggest problems, brethren and sisters? To know what's right in our situation when we have to choose one way or another. our knowledge of the scriptures is often inadequate to the problems with which we're faced. And so we don't know what's right and what's wrong. But then they'll be taught what's right and what's wrong. Go on to the 48th chapter. The last verse of the 48th chapter, which indicates that the wicked will not be allowed in the kingdom. Isaiah chapter 48 and verse 22. There is no peace, saith Yahweh, to the wicked. And if there's going to be peace in the kingdom, brethren and sisters, the wicked have got to be taken away. So in the 49th chapter, we read at verse 8, thus saith Yahweh, in an acceptable time I have heard thee, and in a day of salvation have I helped thee, and I will preserve thee and give thee for a covenant of the people to establish the earth, to cause to inherit the desolate heritages, that thou mayest say to the prisoners, go forth, to them that are in darkness, show yourselves. They shall feed in the ways, and their pastors shall be in all high places. So there's going to be a great blessing upon the people. They shall not hunger nor thirst, neither shall the heat nor sun smite them. For he that hath mercy on them shall lead them, even by the springs of water shall he guide them. I will make all my mountains a way, and my highways shall be exalted. So that the people of Israel is going to be greatly blessed. They will know of his ways. They will be in tune with the God of Israel. They will be in fellowship with him. They will have his mind. They will walk in his ways. And because of this, the nations are going to come up to worship the God that is in the midst of this people. Verse 12, behold, these shall come from far, and lo, these from the north and from the west, and these from the land of Sinim. And the word Sinim, it relates to the Chinese. They will come up to Jerusalem. They will be amongst the hordes that will come up to Jerusalem, those that are left after the judgment of the establishment of the kingdom. I had a confirmation of this when we were in Tiberias not long ago, when there was a Chinese restaurant, and it said in Hebrew, Masada Sinith. Which is the Chinese restaurant. And so this word Sinim is used for the Chinese. They are going to come up. Among the nations that come up will be the Chinese. Those who are out of account as far as the purpose of God is concerned at the present time, they will learn of his ways and come up to Jerusalem. And the 65th chapter of Isaiah, another picture of the peace and blessedness of that time. Isaiah 65 and verse 17. Behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come to mind. Perhaps a word about new heavens and a new earth. The phrase occurs three times in the scriptures. Here and in the 2nd of Peter chapter 3, it is talking about the situation in the kingdom, when the new heavens and the new earth will be an immortal rulership and an enlightened mortal subject population. In the book of Revelation and chapter 21, it's talking about the time beyond the millennium, when the new heavens and the new earth will all be, both heavens and earth, immortal. Because we're told there that there will be no more sea. So this is talking about the time during the millennium, during the 1,000 years. Verse 18, but be ye glad and rejoice forever in that which I create, for behold, I create Jerusalem, Judah, and Jerusalem. Behold, I create Jerusalem, a rejoicing, and her people a joy. And I will rejoice in Jerusalem, and joy in my people. And the voice of weeping shall no more be heard in her, nor the voice of crying. What a wonderful change is going to take place even in the mortal population then, brothers and sisters. The cause of tears will be taken away. They will be in tune with his ways. They will walk in the ways of truth. There shall be no more, it says. There shall be no more thence an infant of days, nor an old man that hath not filled his days. For the child shall die 100 years old, but a sinner being 100 years old shall be accursed. A child 100 years old. 116, wasn't it? The oldest person in the world who died a few weeks ago. A child at 100. We're going to go back. The nations of the earth are going to go back to the length of life that there was before the time of the flood, when they lived very nearly 1,000 years. A child shall die 100 years old. They shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the work of their hands. They shall not labour in vain, nor bring forth for trouble, for they are the seed of the blessed of Yahweh, and their offspring with them. What greater blessing could there be to a people, brethren and sisters? And we've been called to have a part in this work of changing the nation of Israel into a righteous nation by the foolishness of preaching, by the word taking root in their heart. It'll be written in their hearts, not in tables of stone like it was when they were brought out of Egypt. It's going to be written in their hearts. It's going to be placed there gently, and they're going to want to know. There will be a glorious interaction between the immortal rulers and the mortal subjects in that time. It shall come to pass that before they call, I will answer, and while they are yet speaking, I will hear. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the bullock, and dust shall be the serpent's meat. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountains, saith Yahweh. And so the beast nations, which have had their dominion taken away, will be just like the clean animals under the law. They'll feed together, the wolf and the lamb, the lion and the bullock, eating straw like the domestic animals. We have glorious visions of the future age. Let's turn to Ezekiel chapter 48. See what Ezekiel has to tell us about the glorious time of Judah and Jerusalem established in the age to come. We remember Zechariah talking about Judah, his portion in the Holy Land. Well, Ezekiel chapter 48 and verse 8 says, "And by the border of Judah, from the east side unto the west side, shall be the offering which ye shall offer of 20,000 reeds in length, in breadth and in length, as one of the other parts from the east side unto the west side, and the sanctuary shall be in the midst of it." And so the offering that will be made to Yahweh by the people of Israel will be about the area of the portion of Judah as it was under the law. He will inherit his portion, Judah, his portion in the Holy Land. And yet, Judah will not lose by it, because Judah will be the one that will be closest to this sanctuary that is going to be built in the midst of his people. The temple is going to be a glorious building, brothers and sisters. Chapter 42 and verse 16. We need in these days to take hold of these words and understand what the scripture says. He measured the east side with the measuring reed 500 reeds. The measuring reed was about 12 feet long. And so 500 reeds is about 6,000 feet, which is over a mile. The east side of this temple is going to be over a mile long. Verse 17, he measured the north side 500 reeds with the measuring reed round about. He measured the south side 500 reeds with the measuring reed. He turned about to the west side and measured 500 reeds with the measuring reed. You notice, brethren and sisters, that the word reed is there in the Hebrew and on every occasion going through there. Elsewhere in the description of the temple, the measurement isn't always inserted. So we have to deduce the measurement that's being used. But here it's clear. The temple itself is going to be over a mile square, brethren and sisters. He measured it by the four sides. It had a wall round about 500 reeds long and 500 broad. And the word reed isn't there in the original, but clearly from the previous verses, that's what it means. To make a separation between the sanctuary and the profane place. And so there is going to be a wall all the way around this glorious city to which the nations are going to go to learn of the ways of the God of Israel. And there's going to be a priesthood associated with the law that's going to be established in that day. Chapter 44 and verse 10. This is talking about the mortal Levites, the people of Israel that will be able to minister in the temple. The Levites that are gone away far from me when Israel went astray, which went astray from me after their idols, they shall even bear their iniquity. Yet they shall be ministers in my sanctuary, having charge at the gates of the house, and ministering to the house. They shall slay their burnt offering and the sacrifice for the people, and they shall stand before them to minister unto them. You notice that there are animal sacrifices, and that they minister to the people. And then in verse 15, we have a contrast. But the priests, the Levites, the sons of Zadok, these are the immortal priests, because they are the ones that kept the charge of my sanctuary. And some of those who are the sons of Zadok will be those faithful priests who are made immortal and will be there in the kingdom. But it doesn't need to be limited to such people. Because the sons of Zadok means the sons of righteousness. And the saints will all then be sons of righteousness. They will be part of the order of Melchizedek, kings and priests in the age to come. And so the saints will be the priests, the Levites, the sons of Zadok, that kept the charge of my sanctuary when the children of Israel went astray from me. They shall come near unto me to minister unto me, and they shall stand before me to offer unto me the fat and the blood, saith the Lord Yahweh. There's a contrast here between the work of the mortal priests in the kingdom and the immortal ones. Verses 15 and 16 indicate what the immortal ones are going to do, and then from verse 17 onwards it continues to describe what the mortal priests will do. But verse 16, talking about the immortal ones, it says, they shall enter into my sanctuary, and they shall come near to my table to minister unto me, and they shall keep my charge. We shall be there right at the centre, brothers and sisters, to minister to the people. And so we could continue looking at various pictures of the kingdom, perhaps ones worth looking at, just a single verse in Zephaniah chapter 3. We've already had Zephaniah referred to. Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 9. Part of the blessing of the kingdom is that everybody's going to speak the same language. For then will I turn to the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of Yahweh to serve him with one consent. They're all going to talk the same language. The operation, the things that happened at the Tower of Babel are going to be reversed. And so They're all going to serve Yahweh with one consent. We have an indication that the language that will be spoken will be Hebrew, because in the 8th verse, every letter of the Hebrew alphabet occurs. It's the only verse in the scriptures where it does occur. And even the letters that are written differently when they come at the end of the word, something like our capital letters, there are 5 of those letters that are written differently. All of those end forms are also there in verse 8. So there's an indication there that the whole world will speak in Hebrew at that time. And so we could go on, as we say, but perhaps we ought to conclude by a consideration of the purpose from the beginning. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 19. We've already been referred to it in previous addresses, but here we have the purpose that was there from the beginning. That purpose that was there from the beginning is going to be fulfilled. We have considered Israel, the people and the land of Yahweh. We've considered Gog, the king of the north. And the king of the north in days gone by, brothers and sisters, was a foreign power, a Macedonian power, whose capital was in Syria and whose dominion extended way over to the east, as we've already been told. We've considered the position of Tarshish in that day, in the south, and the king of the south, in days gone by, was a foreign power, a Macedonian power, whose power was centred in Egypt. We considered Moab and the prophecy concerning Moab, that there was to be a star out of Jacob who would subdue Moab. We considered Elam and the times of the Gentiles. The times of the Gentiles, which are now fulfilled. We've considered the whirlwinds of the south, by which is brought to pass the statement that Babylon is fallen. And verse 4 of Exodus chapter 19. Ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. And as those nations of the earth go up to the temple in Jerusalem, they will come through the people of Israel, and they will inquire of them of the God that has blessed them with such great blessings. And they will bring the nations to learn to love and to obey their God. That, brethren and sisters, is a work of priesthood. They will, in the kingdom, be a mortal kingdom of priests. Finally, let's just have a look at Deuteronomy chapter 30, because Moses, talking about the law, and it's that law that's going to enlighten the people in that day, talking about the law, said that they didn't need to do great things to obtain it. These things aren't going to be accomplished by great manifestations of power, although manifestations of power are going to be involved. Chapter 30 of Deuteronomy and verse 11. This is the commandment which I command thee this day. It is not hidden from thee, neither is it far off. It is not in heaven that thou shouldest say, who shall go up for us to heaven and bring it unto us that we may hear it and do it? Not the heroic deeds of the gods that the Greeks seem to like. Neither is it beyond the sea that thou shouldest say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it to us, that we may hear it and do it? Not the heroic deeds of the Greeks. But the word is very nigh unto thee, in thy mouth and in thy heart, that thou mayest do it. It is that word, brethren and sisters, that has told us what shall be in the latter days. Let us take heed to that word and allow it to transform us, that when these things are accomplished, then we may have part and lot in these things.